And that takes us to Yokozuna Hart, which we already talked about, and Hogan Yokozuna afterwards. So we made our way through this horrible card. It is a card that, as you said,
it is the worst WrestleMania. It's in that bottom quintet, that WrestleMania 1 and 2,
right,
would be a part of. We talked about those. Those are kind of towards the top of those. WrestleMania 9 for me is the worst WrestleMania.
And here's the thing, too. When you look at the early WrestleManias, there would be a lot of times a roadmap from one WrestleMania to the other that, okay, even if we didn't know it at the time, as we talked about, hindsight, yeah, you could see it from Savage winning to Hogan Savage the next year. You could see certain things happening. We thought Hogan Warrior was going to lead to Hogan Warrior 2. It didn't. But instead, at that one, it was Warrior Savage, and this is where it started to really get unpredictable. Who would have predicted Savage, after losing a retirement match, wrestling for the championship next year in the co-main event? From here, at WrestleMania 9...
He's on commentary.
He's on commentary at this one. Equal unlikelihood, because we're talking about Bret Hart here, who has just gone through this very dispiriting, I'm not going to say burial, because he went on to win King of the Ring. They thought they hadn't damaged him that much. They were wrong,
King of the Ring, though, was Vince being like, oh boy, I done screwed up. Because where are we going? Are we going into, are we transitioning to WrestleMania 10?
We are.
Okay.
We are.
All right. I just wanted to make sure, because I was going to say I can take us there, but I wanted to make sure where you wanted me
to
go.
That's where we're going. Okay. I'm talking about the unpredictable path of Bret Hart in that next year.
Oh, see, I think this one is a lot better than some of those other ones as far as the predictability. I think you could see it because Vince, as soon as he realized that Hogan had no interest in putting Bret over, as soon as he realized he had no interest in being a Monday Night Raw, he's like, what have I done? Oh, my. I think he quickly learned he made a terrible mistake.
If he was that remorseful, he wouldn't have decided that Lex Luger was going to be the next franchise babyface in a panic move.
Well, because, yes, that's a very good point, and I don't have an answer for that right now. But King of the Ring, hold on.
Okay.
No, you hold the phone, Rick Morris.
Okay.
King of the Ring occurred before that.
Yes.
And, you know, Brett being Canadian, I don't know when. Look, I don't know when.
Brett went out and had three amazing matches pay-per-view.
That was
did everything he was supposed to do.
And you're right. Long term, I don't know what Vince was thinking after that, because he puts him in the feud with Jerry Lawler after that show.
Right.
A very good feud. He sets up a good feud. He jobs Hogan to Yokozuna.
Right.
So we basically have erased WrestleMania 9. Yokozuna's the champ. Brett remains against all odds. This is a testament to what a performer he was. And this is important, I think, when we talk about WrestleMania 10. Stays very over. He has a good feud. Jerry Lawler, it's not like this incredible money-drawing feud, but in a wrestling sense, the classical sense, a great feud.
But Brett's starting to look like 1A for life at this point.
Yes. But, again, a testament to his own skills, though, he stayed really, really over.
Right.
Okay, only because he's as good as he is. Luger gets the traditional Vince McMahon mega push out of nowhere. Turns face, slams him on the Intrepid on 4th of July, gets the SummerSlam match where he probably should have gotten the title in hindsight.
Yes.
Because it stalled all his momentum and he didn't get it. He wins by count out.
In a match where they said ahead of time there would be no rematch.
Well, I know.
For the love of God.
Well, here's the plan, though. Here's the thing. The idea all along, they had a very long-term thing. He was going to get the title at WrestleMania. And the way he was going to get it was by... Because remember, now everyone would be onto it because everyone just knows about the Rumble, about
right.
How you win it, you get the title shot. Their thing was he's going to win the Rumble, and he'll get the title. That's how he gets the title shot.
Right.
A funny little thing happened along the way. And I've read a lot of the observers recently talk about this period. They tried so hard to keep him over at the level that Brett was staying at. They couldn't do it. Luger, man, the crowd was just cold. Just kept getting, as the months went on, they just kept getting colder and colder and colder with him. And it became obvious as they rolled into the Royal Rumble, Ricky, that Bret Hart, who had kind of started this thing with Owen now, okay, Owen turns on him earlier in the show, that Bret was more over than Lex. They do the famous tie finish at the Royal Rumble. And they let the crowd, and Vince, and this is where I want to get in, now we get into WrestleMania 10.
Yes.
I wrote about this on your blog last year, ballsy booking on this show. Outside the box booking, I really liked the booking of the show because I said WrestleMania 9 was them defecating on Bret Hart.
Yeah.
This was them taking a large wad of toilet paper and cleaning up the mess. Because they had built in and they had to stick with it because back then they respected their long-term vision still, mm-hmm. which is important to note, and I respect them, their respect. They had this big plan that Luger's going to get the title. Along the way, it just becomes painfully obvious to anyone with, you know, a set of eyes and a pair of ears that Bret Hart is more over than Lex Luger.
Right.
Okay? Despite what happened the previous year, despite that he's in this kind of 1A feud with Lawler. So they're in a situation then where Vince listens to the audience after the Royal Rumble. It becomes painfully obvious that Bret is his number one babyface, not made in the USA, Lex Luger. So they do the dual title matches.
Right.
And I thought it was so... I really liked this. Outside the box, we're going to have a good debate because you think I'm crazy for thinking this. To me, I think this is the third best WrestleMania ever. Only 3 and 17 are better than this one, I think.
I mean, I guess my whole thing is that you've got the two matches that are, you're calling them 5 stars, and I guess I'm not going to argue with you on that. But I'm just wondering how far that takes you on the historical continuum. Because in just looking at this, I don't think I'd wipe my ass with the rest of the card. So,
okay, again, what do we know about wrestling? Well, here's the thing, though. It's the combination of the two matches, and then for me, righting the wrongs, setting it, it's like, hey, Bret Hart's the champ. Yeah. And then the narrative of Bret Hart on this show is unbelievable. I think from him starting on the opening match, losing to Owen Hart in the first of 2 5-star matches, this card would see,
and establishing his brother as a main eventer in the process.
Owen was a complete joke going into the show.
Yes.
Not a joke because he was well pushed, but he was viewed as a non-player by the audience at large. Kind of like he had been a JTTS for years, and no one bought him as having a chance. He
right.
pins him clean in a 5-star match,
right?
Which isn't even the best match on the show. And then Bret would go on. You know, they first of all, it was the double title match. They set it up where there would be a coin. You know, one guy would wrestle Yokozuna first. The other guy to offset that would have to have a match.
Mm-hmm.
Luger's opponent was Crush. It was going to be his schedule. A little trivia if you didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Okay. Which would have, of course, been absolutely terrible and would not have been a 5-star match to lead off the show. But everyone knew that. Like, when they announced that it would be Bret or Owen or Luger, come on. Which way do you think it's going to go?
Right.
Right? So.
Would have been funny if they had forgotten the gimmick.
Yeah, crying. Yeah. And they're like, Well, I think it might have been a tape draw anyway. But
yeah.
So they do it. Luger gets the first shot. Here it is. After 8-9 months, Luger finally gets his, you know, big rematch at Yokozuna. They do the special referee gimmick. Mr.
Yeah.
Perfect comes back. Screws Luger. He disqualifies him for kind of no reason, for putting his hands on him.
Right.
And Luger, that's it, man, for you. And see, usually I feel bad for guys in that spot, but not Lex Luger. Okay? They gave this guy every push imaginable. It didn't pan out. Hit the bricks, pal. And then...
Well, I want to play a little bit of devil's advocate on that, because with what they did at SummerSlam, it's a thing where...
93, the previous
SummerSlam 93... You know, I'm sure Vince would sit here and say, I'm not culpable for what went on outside of here, but Lex Luger, in the kayfabe sense, more than anybody that I can think of from that period of time, had the rap of can't win the big one, because they always did the screw job finishes with him and Flair.
Yeah.
He only ever won the belt when Flair wasn't there. Lex Luger didn't have the margin of error to have that cheesy SummerSlam finish. I think that doomed him in the eyes of the fans. I honestly think so.
It did, but in the end...
It came out to him in a better place, but, you know, let's not act like it was any grand plan.
I don't think he was...
It was a screw-up that worked out in their favor.
I don't think he was deserving of having a better legacy.
No, he wasn't necessarily, but it was...
To me, like, when I watch, like, him kind of, like... In, like, you know, they do the... Vince McMahon does one of his patents on commentary. And Lex Luger is now in the ring... Standing there, defeated, and like I laugh. Like I'm like rolling on the ground saying, "Oh my God, Larry, you know, however you pronounce his last name,
Fall."
Yeah, Larry Fall. The promotion done did you again, you know?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the night, Roddy Piper's a special guest, and Brett is rightfully put as the world champion, ending the horrific reign of Yokozuna, and the right guy comes out on top, and you have this wonderful coming out of the show, wonderful main event program of Brett versus Owen, because Owen had beaten Brett. I love the booking of this show.
Right.
Owen winning Brett losing in the first match to his brother Clean, only to go on and win the title. I love that booking.
All right, here's the thing, though.
Normally that doesn't work, but it did here. It did work here, and they screwed over. And normally I don't justify them screwing over guys who have been pushed. But the right guy got screwed over. The right guy got put over.
Luger is Wally Pipp. That's exactly what this is. And Bret Hart was Lou Gehrig.
But deservingly so. Like, would Wally Pipp have been one of the greatest first basemen of all time?
If you probably not. Or if you prefer. Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe.
Would Drew Brady have been?
You know, I thought
Drew
you can't
Brady.
Lose your job because of an injury.
Would Drew Bledsoe. Well, he didn't lose it because he didn't.
I know
he wasn't injured. He just wasn't as talented and not as over.
He was injured by the booking, but
but the crowd didn't take to him.
The crowd was influenced by the booking, though. The crowd. Here he goes again, man.
You're right.
Yeah.
The fact that he does not win the title at SummerSlam '93,
right,
did not help him. They should, in retrospect, have put the title on him right away.
Yes.
Where they go from there, I don't know. Oh, well. But to me, it's one of those things that it worked out for them.
It did.
In the end.
Can't disagree.
And I love the booking of that. I love the Bret Hart narrative on this show.
Before we start to move down the card, let me just ask you this, because it sounds like you're either overestimating or maybe you think I'm underestimating the impact of the booking of Bret Hart here, because I look at it like, you know what, because of the previous 18 months, it was irretrievable, I think, at that point for me that he was going to be a company anchor. Or are you saying that I'm looking at it because of revisionism, because of what came after 94? Do you think I'm being a revisionist because they did it to him again in 95
and 96? I think you just have unrealistic expectations for Bret Hart. I think that if you would have booked Bret Hart perfectly.
Yeah. He's a fringe top 10 guy of all time, I think, booked perfectly.
He would not have.
As a draw, even.
He would not have. Bret Hart, booked perfectly.
Yeah.
Is not going to yield the results of Hulk Hogan.
No.
Okay.
No, of course
so
not.
If you accept that, okay, then. WrestleMania 10 to me is his kind of finest out. To me, that was him at his peak.
Right.
Now, you're right. They did him. He kind of. That was his big. You know, the first title reign, no one really. And he's, I think, admitted this. I did read this part. The first title reign was kind of like. Okay, you know, Ric Flair's talked about a lot of times, you know, winning the belt the first time really means nothing. It's winning it again shows the promotion thinks you're a guy who can carry the ball.
It's a feeling out process
yes.
the first time.
So the first time meant nothing. His best run, I think, when he was comfortable and his most happy in the company, was this second title run in 94 when he was working with Owen in the main events.
Right.
This was the pinnacle of Bret Hart. Those shows did okay, I mean, for that era. I mean, look, I mean, it wasn't Hogan Andre, but they didn't have. I mean, that's unrealistic to think that they could have done Hogan Andre.
No, it's true. That's true. It's just if he was drawing better, he'd have had the belt for more than 8 months.
He was drawing okay in 94, though. I mean, relatively speaking.
Not good enough to keep the belt from going to Diesel in Vince's mind.
Well, I think there was some. Well, that was a whole year and a half.
That was Survivor Series 94. He lost to Backlund, transitional.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Well. He had been champion for like 8 months, though, at that point.
But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. There's.
And who knows?
The belt,
and who knows and
there's
who,
drop the belt to get it back. But when it's drop the belt to a transitional heel champion who drops the belt to a new anchor guy, you ain't getting it back. You're back to 1A. I'm just saying.
That didn't help his case. But to me, look, there could have been dirty politics in play. I mean,
You seem to think I'm looking at it at revisionist eyes, that if you just look at it as of WrestleMania 10, that it was still, that it was not irretrievable for Bret to be much bigger than he ended up being in the eyes of history. You're saying that WrestleMania 10 could have put him on a much better trajectory had it not been for the things that came afterwards.
I'm saying if I look from a kayfabe sense at Bret Hart's career, WrestleMania 10 is his pinnacle.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with that.
That's all I'm saying.
I would agree.
And
he finally avenged. Yeah,
from the kayfabe sense, the wrong, you know, Vince even, who's not, you know, never been accused of being the nicest man in the world,
yeah,
the nicest boss even kind of threw him the bone. And Bret said this before in interviews that it was pretty cool how, like, all the baby faces come out. Even Luger comes out.
Right.
And they put him on his shoulders. And it's kind of like, okay, Bret's the man. Like, you never felt like he was the man the first title reign.
Right.
Bret Hart is the, look, WWF, maybe he's not Hulk Hogan. Maybe he's never going to be Hulk Hogan, even if we try our best. But damn it, Bret Hart is the man now in WWF. And for that moment and that year, that was the right move.
It was.
Diesel was not the right move. Bret Hart was, yes, late in 95, by the end of 94, was given lousy booking again. And he was given lousy booking in 93.
Right.
You know? But Bret Hart, to me, from late 92 to at some point in 95, was whether he was a champion or not, was the best guy in the company.
All right. Well, we have the semi-main to get to
before,
and as well as the undercard things after that. The semi-main to those three bouts we already talked about here. Let me ask you this, because the guy who was in the semi-main, if we're talking about company philosophy at the time, this was a ladder match to unify the two claims to the Intercontinental title, Razor Ramon, Shawn Michaels, the other five-star match, as you called it, in 1847. For Razor, here's how I always looked at it at the time. That it was a thing where, because we know that Vince vacillated between, I'll go with Bret and later on Shawn, and then, I got to go back to the big guys. I'm always fascinated that Razor didn't get a look because he was sort of a hybrid. He wasn't as good of a worker as Bret and Shawn. He wasn't as big as Diesel. Razor, to me, was less all or nothing than either end of the spectrum.
I'm trying.
And he had a lot of charisma.
He did, and I kind of saw where you were going with that early on in your very nice soliloquy there.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. What's your answer for that, as best as you can think?
I'm trying to think of a point of comparison from the 80s for the Razor Ramon level, because I never bought, you know, remember we talked about earlier, like, the kind of that Jim Duggan, Jake Roberts level of babyface where he was always real high, but you never bought him as going to be the world champion.
That's, so you're saying that
I never,
as opposed to, like, Piper never got the title, but he would have been credible as champion. You're saying
he was somewhere in between those two levels, Razor Ramon.
I'll give you that. Yeah, I never
during his tenure, and he was very over. For 2 years, he was the number two babyface in the company when they were rotating the number one. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Shawn kind of started as three and then usurped him to go to one. Bret was one and kind of fell back to three.
Yes.
But I never viewed, and maybe it's because he was always feuding for the Intercontinental title anyway the whole time.
Yeah, perception's reality. Yeah. And the IC had really taken a dip in the eyes of the fans.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, it had, because there just wasn't the depth. But
right.
I never, at no point, at the time, and no point looking at things from a revisionist perspective, did I ever say, you know what, Scott Hall should have got a run maybe for the world title right there.
In terms of revisionism, don't you have to say he should have gotten a look well before Diesel? At least in terms of revisionism. Throw me that bone.
I don't know, because Nash,
you're going to say he was neutered, and he was.
No, Nash,
but he sucked as a worker.
Yeah, but that when have they cared? When has that mattered? Except for, like, you know, a few minutes.
Here's the problem, though. None of their heels could work. They didn't have heels that could carry Nash.
Yeah, they didn't. Yeah, all of his good matches were against, you know, when they worked against babyface Bret.
Right.
It's one of those things that, like, with a draft, like in the NFL, and you're going with the guy with the, they always say, the higher upside.
Right.
Okay, he's got bigger bust potential, you know, like with quarterback. That's the thing with Nash. Ramon has a certain ceiling that he was never going to get beyond.
So you're saying, like, if he's a cornerback, he's a guy that's going to make the Pro Bowl three times over the course of his career as opposed to being a Champ Bailey?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Diesel had
Champ Bailey upside in the eyes of Vince.
Yeah, but he Because, I mean, you said it yourself, he was bigger. Okay, he was bigger.
Literally all he had going for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, a nice dry charisma, dry humorous charisma.
Yeah, again, he's a guy, too, that, you know, legacy-wise, I'm not sure where you, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Here's what I say. There is a looking at things through hindsight.
Right.
When you look at the three original NWO, this is way off the beaten path.
Right.
The three original members of the NWO, Hogan, yeah. Hall, Nash, there is a very clear pecking order in retrospect how those guys stand. Hogan, Nash, Hall.
Right.
No one would dispute kind of the pecking order and the power structure.
Nobody would.
And Hall wasn't the politician those guys were either.
No, he wasn't.
And he also was a complete drunk and a drug addict.
He was.
Which and, you know, shouldn't be joking
arguably
about.
At times more so than these other guys. But yeah. This was a real quick battle here between the three guys. And interesting, in the eyes of history, you made a nice contribution to the segue here. This was the last moment of Diesel's career before he became something. Because after this, he would get into a feud with Razor for the Intercontinental title.
And he
Razor,
would win.
Yes.
And Michaels took time off.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure if he was injured or just did it to get out of the way for Diesel. I can't remember the story behind that.
I think it was a combination of time off, wanted to try doing Heartbreak Hotel. Diesel was doing, the single stuff here. So this was the end of the first phase of Diesel's career, which was basically nothing.
Yeah, he's basically they were going to fire
corner.
Him. They give him the Diesel push, which
at
obviously
Royal
didn't
Rumble,
exist,
yes.
You know, at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
But that said, I mean, they must not have thought much because they throw him out of the match early. He was in Michael's corner. And then, man, you know, the younger, not to be like old fogue on the corner, yelling at the kids in the lawn. The younger fans seem to not take to this match, Michaels Ramon ladder match, as much as like people from our generation. That's because I'm assuming.
Even me, because I was watching, and I'm like, does this really hold up?
Here's the thing, though. I kind of made fun of people who like overrate influences, I think, in one of the World Pocket. Man, I remember when this happened. The next day, I must have watched this match like six times. Like, it's, yes, the bumps have gotten bigger, but there has to be a starting point. And when this match happened, it's just like when any other to me, the ladder matches have been decreasing in impact because you've seen it all. They obviously the concept reached its peak with TLC,
right,
with Edge and Christian and the Dudleys and the Hardys.
The greatest.
That reached. But as far as a solo ladder match goes, I'll put this up against any solo ladder match
you,
ever happened.
You,
as a matter of fact, I believe it's the best.
Do you hear any comparisons? Any similarities between you saying that and our good pal Jake Digman saying that superstar Billy Graham would have been Hulk Hogan better than Hulk Hogan? Do you hear any comparisons in talking up the original to that extreme?
I think it's a little different.
Okay.
Because
I'm
what
sure
Jake
you do.
Said is wrong, first of all.
Okay. We start from that point.
Okay. And there's some comparison in that there wouldn't have been Hulk Hogan without superstar Billy Graham.
Okay.
Just like there wouldn't have been TLC.
Clearly.
Without this. But this, it just can't be. I just remember the period.
And
you can't just because it's for the time period it was in, it was so revolutionary. I'm telling you, man.
Yeah.
I wore this tape out. Bret and Owen, and to your point about the undercard, which we're going to probably breeze through.
Right.
I would always fast forward kind of from the Bret Owen.
Yeah.
This is before DVDs, kids.
Yeah.
Okay, when it was a real simple click of that right button, okay? You had to fast forward and wait, 5 minutes. Between these, I wore that tape out, man, of these two matches. Ray, to me, I was a huge Shawn fan, Michaels fan too, as you know. And, you know, obviously, getting back to Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, I just call him Scott Hall at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people kind of dog him. Oh, you know, that was just, you know, Rick, that unprofessional Ric Flair roundtable that I referenced, I think, when we did a podcast. I said, oh, it's just Shawn in a ladder.
Ric Flair had to be sniffing glue to say that.
Well, and
or bitter, and I think that's the explanation.
Well, he doesn't like Hall and Nash.
Yeah.
For the WCW days. But there's some truth to that Michaels was clearly the star in defeat
here.
Well,
he was the bump machine. Sure.
Yes. But the fact that he was in there with a guy as over as Ramon helped this match.
Right. It did.
They were doing things. I remember going in, because see, this was the first televised ladder match. They had done other ladder matches. If you've watched other ladder matches before, there were some bumps, but the ladder wasn't really a weapon. Like that, it was. I remember there's a point in this match where Razor grabs the ladder, he sets it on the apron, okay, and he's going to get in, right? Sean does this slide drop kick move with the, and it was just like when that happened at the time. I'm telling you, I mean, I'm getting you're looking at me right now like, who is this deranged man I'm doing this podcast with? I remember watching that at the, and just something simple like that, which now is just so commonplace and so formulaic, just blowing my mind. I was like, whoa, we're going to start doing, like, did he just, and it's not over? You know, because, like, before in those days, it's like, oh, my God, he got a ladder kicked
in. It was a transition spot.
Yeah, now it's like, my God, he's going to be out 6 months selling the ribs. And he did, and I'm just like, and I just remember, that was the first match where, and you get a lot of these now, like kind of the Ring of Honor, like, please don't stop chant stuff, where it was more about the performance than the storyline. You know, back then it's like matches, the end tied into a storyline. This was the first match I can remember watching. I just didn't want it to end. I just wanted to keep seeing more performance and spots and where they could take it.
Okay, this is where you've won me over as I think about this, because it, as mind-blowing as it is to realize this, and I just did, this was a little bit more than 4 months before Eastern Championship Wrestling became Extreme Championship Wrestling. This was the beginning of things outside the normal, hardcore, whatever, becoming possible. Remember in a previous mini-episode, we were talking about Piper and Bad News Brown at WrestleMania 6. If only they'd had that brawl in an era where more things were possible. After this match, all things were possible.
This opened Pandora's box.
It did.
This is, you know, and what's great is, you know, by like 2001, 2002, the gimmick had become tired.
Right.
But they did such a great job of preserving this match. For see, Rick, we're at the age, and again, not to be the grumpy old man lecturing the kids on the lawn, but they preserved this match for so long. Keep this in mind, 4 years after this.
Right.
Talk about not, they could never do this today. If they have a successful match, they'd beat it in the ground within 6 months.
Right.
4 years later, after this, they had done 3 ladder matches on pay-per-view only.
Oh, yeah.
Sean and Razor do a rematch the following year at SummerSlam, 18 months.
Sean's storyline, by the way.
Well, they needed a good match for what was going to be an atrocious show. And then Triple H and The Rock at SummerSlam 98.
That's right. That's right. It was
so,
that.
And then from there, they really, there was no standout ladder match until the TLCs.
That's
so
true.
I mean, for 6 years, the legacy of this match was protected. And because you, it's almost a different match, though, comparing this to TLC. You're talking about 2 guys versus 6 guys. And those 6 guys went in with the explicit idea of performance over storyline. You know, it was by the time they did it at WrestleMania 17, which we'll talk about, you know, down the road, storyline didn't matter. It was just going to be a stunt show.
So I guess we have them to thank for the modern thing of wrestlers on camera, not talking about wins and losses, but thank you for giving me the match of my life last night. Yes, we can trace it back to that.
In many
there
ways.
There you go, guys.
I'd like to say that the 2 matches in the show, 2 of my top 4 WrestleMania matches of all time. I told you Savage Steamboat was number 2.
Okay.
I give both. That's one of only 4 5-star matches in WrestleMania history for me. I'm a top writer. I said only 8 get 4 3/4 or higher. Sean Razor gets the 3 spot, where Bret Owen gets the 4 spot.
Okay.
So and Savage, you know, number 1, we'll talk about in a little bit.
Meanwhile, you know, as they might say over in Iran, I'm not sure that anybody would say that there's Jack Shiite on the rest of the card here, but we'll go.
But did it matter really?
Well, we'll go through and we'll see. But I, you know, a bad undercard is something I'm going to subtract off. Although we're moving towards
that's
where
what
at least
keeps it from the other way below.
Yeah,
that's
why
this
is not a pantheon WrestleMania because of that. Although again, I do respect. By this point in history, most matches at least had a storyline rationale for existing. I'll give them that. Although it leads to crap like Bam Bam Bigelow and Luna Vachon against Doink the Clown and Dink mixed tag match. Bam Bam and Luna go over in 6:09.
Which is at least they went out because, good God, did I hate Doink and Dink. I'm trying to think of a comparison to how awful Doink and Dink were at this period.
And I don't want to, God help me, I'm going to sound like one of these Portlandia hipsters, but a waste of 2 great workers in Bam Bam Bigelow and Matt Bourne. It really
wasn't
was.
Matt Bourne at that point. It was somebody else.
Oh, was it somebody else?
It was
All right.
It was I think Ray Licelli or something
like
that.
Was it Steve Kern or
No, I think it was.
Was it the Brawler?
No, it wasn't that point. Yeah, I think it was Ray Licelli or something like that.
All right. So it wasn't that big of a waste. Randy Savage defeated Crush. Savage's last big WWF match. Falls Count Anywhere, 949.
Not a bad match. A good revenge storyline. The former friends again did Crush no favors, but Crush sucks.
It was a really good storyline, but it just...
Remember the Savage-Crush Summit?
Yeah.
How political of them.
Yeah.
That was a good storyline.
And
how ironic that, you know, Savage get his throat dropped in Shades of Steamboat.
Yeah, Summit. Well, at least Crush was a politician who was really from Hawaii.
Yes,
as I get the disbelieving stare from Kyle Ross.
I do my best screaming A. Smith. How disrespectful.
Alundra Blaze Women's Champion defeated Leilani Kai in 3:20. The same Leilani Kai who was wrestling for the title back in the Amula days.
Yeah, I feel bad. Alundra Blaze was actually somewhat over during this period. She just did not have a lot of people to work with. They did bring in Bull Nakano later in the year. But I mean, as a general rule, unless if you're hot and have a nice rack, no one gives a crap about women's wrestling in this company.
Right, and Alundra only scored on both scores.
Yes,
so.
A few Jack and Cokes in me, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I wouldn't even take that many, but yeah. WWF Tag Team Title Match, a true abomination. The Quebecers, Jacques and Pierre, with Johnny Polo losing by count out to Men on a Mission, Mo and Mabel, with Oscar.
Didn't they take a walk, too?
They might have.
Men on a Mission was obviously an atrocious Vince McMahon interpretation of rap music.
Right.
The Quebecers, I love in a very manly way.
See, but here's the thing, though. And we've had Jacques on the show.
I remember I was, like, very nervous. This was, like, when I was really getting smart markish.
Uh-huh.
I was like, God, I don't care. Just don't put the titles on Men on a Mission.
Oh, that horrible rap gimmick. But here's the thing, though.
Oh, yeah. Remember, that was like he
right.
never understood what he was saying.
Right. And I like the stuff that Jacques did on the show, and he was very nice to come on and give us a great one-hour conversation on our show.
Oh, I love when you bury past guests.
It was, oh, yeah. Yeah, that was, but I'm not going to bury it. But here's the thing, though. Here's my problem with this tag team. They're a good tag team, but I'm not a fan of limiting gimmicks. They should have... Instead of bad guys from Quebec, like, I look at them like they could have carried off like a more, you know, well-rounded Tully and Arn kind of a thing. That's what they should have been to me.
The thing is, I guess there was the Rougeau brothers, and they couldn't just, loved heel Rougeau brothers. They could have I loved the Quebecers. The gimmick was stupid, but it's one of those things.
I just have a hard
time
getting past
the gimmick. It was one of those things that, against all odds...
Oh, they made it work to a decent amount.
They had some great match. I love that match they had against 1-2-3 Kid and Marty Jannetty, where they lose the belts earlier in the year. Great match.
Yeah, that was something.
Even the match where they dropped the titles of the Head Shrinkers a month later is pretty good.
The only one that we didn't talk about yet was very forgettable. Earthquake defeating Adam Bomb with Harvey Whippleman.
This was a backdrop for the Howard Finkel-Harvey Whippleman feud. Cy Sperling was involved in this, for God's sakes.
And again, Earthquake, we talked about this before. When they turn lukewarm heels and try and wring something out of them as faces.
Well, remember, he was the post-title reign feud for Yokozuna, but it didn't work. Earthquake tends to quit or something like that.
Well, he ended up leaving the promotion soon thereafter.
And by the way, Adam Bomb, Jesus. I mean, who'd he piss? Whose hand did he shake? Forget the shake rate.
32 seconds, yeah.
I mean, somebody must have ran long here.
Adam Bomb was always a guy I thought in those days that was going to go somewhere.
Remember, they gave him that big push as a face, and he was kind of – remember, they had like
– Yeah.
And it was one of those things that they loved because they had like the Bomb Squad.
Right.
You know, that they could build in like some stupid – he, to me, was like better than Crush.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
By big roided up face standards on that very generous
curve. He seems underrated.
He
seems underrated.
Not a bad worker.
They
dropped the ball with him.
Two things worked against him. Stuff like this.
And the name.
Jobbing him with the name is
the name is limiting.
Adam Bomb. Oh, I get it. That's so funny. I get it. His name's Adam Bomb, and he's from Three Mile Island. Oh.
Exactly. I mean, this was a good 10 years before ROH was dabbling in the genre of stoner humor. You know, this was not a thing that the WWF was,
going to
make a lot of money
off of. What was that drug group they had the first year? Chad Repack, are you listening? We used to laugh so hard that when they had those raves in the ring and stuff like that. What was the name of that group?
Don't know, but...
God, was that funny. And
funnier than the Christopher Street Connection?
Oh, this was way. This was on. What was the name of that?
Funnier,
group?
Funnier than the Osirian portal. That would have to take a lot to be funny.
God,
than
what was the name of that group? It was so funny because I remember the announcers came on the one time. Like, we hear that. I can't even begin to say what they were just doing off the title belts, and it was so fun.
Oh man,
God, was it funny? Why can I not think of that name? There was like 800 of them, and they would just raid. God, it was so indie, but it was so funny.
We've done this before on our mini episodes here when we're talking about something as bad as what the undercard of WrestleMania 10 was. We end up having to spice it with something more interesting at the end.
Yes, but I'm sorry, I don't care what you say. Okay.
All right. So 2 5-star matches in and of themselves.
No. 2 5-star matches coupled with righting the wrongs of the previous year.
Well, you would need the Men in Black mind erase thing to completely get rid of 1993, I think, to right the wrongs.
I think this did as good a job as you could. To me, it's like nice, good, nice, solid there, Vince.
This is dabbling the Elaine Benes one square on a diarrhea splotch.
Yeah, he beat the guy that. I don't know. To me, I don't know. I guess maybe, you know, and I'm a guy who's very critical about this. I kind of viewed this as Brett being put on the pedestal, and they did as good a job as they could, considering that, yeah, he got kind of hosed by Hogan the previous year. But they came out of this. It's one of those shows. How could this show have possibly been better?
Which
is always one of my litmus tests.
Let's say this
how could
also.
This show have been better?
The tag team title match, I would have put somebody else in there with the Quebecers.
But to the average lay person, is that going to increase their interest in this show?
No, but if you restore the value of the belts, then that helps
you.
The tag team titles,
and they had not even hit their nadir yet.
Let's just say this, and we'll say this to wrap on. It's very fitting to mention this. In a run, because they were already now with King of the Ring, they were up to the 5 pay-per-views per year. They were in as bad a run of pay-per-views, as horrid as I can recall. And this was a very good one in that run.
That's what helps this show's legacy, too. Me and the little fella always agreed on this. And Yes, it helps somewhat, but this is clearly the best pay-per-view of the bad era of 93 through like 96.
Clearly.
And I think that makes this, and again, it's the bad era, so it's not on the level of, say, a WrestleMania 3 or a WrestleMania 17, which are on the pedestal by themselves, but it counts for something, and that's why I've got it in that, you know, this is the first WrestleMania that I've got in that top group of 5.
Okay.
So I've got it number 3 of all time.
Number 3 of all time. All right, there it is. WrestleMania 10.
It's going to get we're going to drop right back down to the bottom by the way, starting with the next podcast.
Yeah, exactly. When next we gather to talk some grabs here, the 6th chapter of this WrestleMania is 11 through 13. It gets a heck of a lot worse.
Yeah, the nadir.
Yes. Yes, you're going to hear us really tooling on some bad stuff, but this was some pretty good stuff here. WrestleMania 10 following up on WrestleMania 9. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross. It's the Kyle Ross 9-part anthology of WrestleMania. You've been listening to part, 5 at this point.
God save us all.
Yeah, all right.